And now I'd like to properly introduce today's speaker, Dr. Ellen Messer. Dr. Messer is an anthropologist. She's dedicated to rooting out hunger and promoting human rights. She specializes in cross-cultural perspectives on the human right to food, sustainable food systems, and the cultural history of nutrition, agriculture, and food science. She received her PhD in ecological anthropology from the University of Michigan and has taught at Yale University, Wheaton College, has served as the director for the World Hunger Program at Brown University. In 2009, she was awarded the distinction of fellow from the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences. She currently has faculty affiliations with Tufts University, Boston University, and Brandeis University. And she is the author of many books. She's published widely in the areas of hunger, human rights, and also conflicts and their relation to hunger. She's very interested in breaking the link between conflict and food, between conflicts and food insecurity. And some of her publications include a book that she co-wrote with Lori Fields DeRose and Sarah Millman, "Who's Hungry and How Do We Know? Food Shortage, Poverty, and Deprivation." And she also edited, along with P. Uven, the Hunger Reports, 1994 and 96, which were very important body of literature for scholars in this area. So we're delighted to have you with us today. She's going to give a presentation, and then we'll have lots of time to talk and ask questions. So Dr. Messer, thanks for being here.
Thanks very much, and thanks for inviting me. Over the years, I've participated in the seminars here, and it was my desire, since the opportunity came up and given what I was working on, to try to give back to the seminar, to reciprocate to Boston College for its hospitality, both hospitality in terms of sharing lunches and food, but hospitality in terms of creating a very safe and active space where we could share ideas about very important issues connecting religion and public policy. My objectives today are to really share with you basic ideas about the human right to food, to the extent that people are not aware of this particular formulation, and to compare the legal, philosophical, and religious, including Roman Catholic, formulations of the right to food. Second, to raise awareness about the human rights advances and also violations and what we as human communities can do about these issues. To identify as a third objective the possible contributions that people can make here to the kinds of initiatives that have followed Pope Francis's initiative and also Caritas's initiative on right to food, and really to talk about what some of those activist components are. And then finally, to open up a discussion to look at the research policy and practice implications of putting together Pope Francis's initial initiative on the right to food and ending hunger with his most recent initiative to address the environmental and climate change issues. How do we put these together? How do we draw on the commonalities rather than the conflicts between having different kinds of policy objectives? So what I'll do here is just give you a little background to myself and to my work on these issues. I'm then going to summarize the work that Barry Brenton, an anthropologist at St. John's University, and I have done together in putting the right to food language together with Roman Catholic policy language and theological language, share that with you. Then share the results of an American Anthropological Association panel that I organized with him for the 2014 annual meeting of the American Anthropological Association that specifically addressed Pope Francis's initiative and looked at what anthropologists were learning from responding to this initiative on the right to food. And then finally talk about the way in which the right to food and what kinds of other issues arise as we look at the environment initiative for 2015. And I hope that we will have a very vibrant discussion. I've been told I should talk informally for about 20 minutes and then open it up, so that's what I will do. So as you know, I'm an anthropologist. I have worked on issues of hunger and human rights most of my life, but particularly during the 12 years that I worked with the World Hunger Program, which was a think tank at Brown University, where I developed a whole line of research and activism centered on institutions and values connected to ending hunger. And this was a period in the late 1980s when anthropologists were beginning to explore why they hadn't been more activist and working more with advocacy, and I took human rights, and particularly hunger and human rights, as my two areas for activism to show how we could be both responsible scholars and also activists at various levels. It was very beneficial for me that I also had colleagues in the American Anthropological Association who were very interested in the intersections between science and religion. So I had an opportunity to develop the Human Right to Food framework for a group of concerned scientists and religious scholars and activists, a group that was called IRISH, the Institute for Religion in an Age of Science, that involved a group of scholars who had formed coalitions in the late 1960s, early 1970s, to talk about the interfaces between religion and science and to try to overcome what seemed to be an insuperable divide. And it was there that I linked up with Barry Brenton, who is a nutritional anthropologist I had known for some time. He's located at St. John's, which provides him with very easy access to the United Nations, where he is a consultant with the Holy See on issues of food and nutrition policy, and this is how I got involved, because as we were together at a meeting of IRES, this Institute for Religion in the Age of Science, I presented a program on the right to food. He presented a program on food sovereignty, and he came up to me afterwards and he said, "I'm supposed to be writing talking points for the Holy See on the right to food for the 2013 General Assembly meeting, but it sounds to me from your presentation you really should do it." So I said, "Okay, we'll do it together, and I'll be talking about that presently." When we finished that, we got together again, and I said, "Well, that's really good that we did that. Is there any follow-up?" And he said, "Well, actually, the Pope's first initiative is on ending hunger and promoting the right to food." So I said, "Well, why don't we organize an American Anthropological Association discussion after a year to see what difference this initiative has made in the places where anthropologists are observing outcomes in developing countries?" So that was the 2014 anthropology meetings. And now what I've done is followed up with the people who participated in that session to see how they are viewing the Pope's initiatives on the environment as his dovetails with ending hunger. So we're putting those together. So to begin then, the right to food. So the right to food really goes back to the United Nations Universal Declaration on Human Rights, which recognizes that everyone has a right to adequate food as part of a decent standard of living. The United Nations evolving international legal framework then talked about the right to food in two internationally binding legal treaties. One is the International Covenant on Economic, Social, Cultural Rights, which acknowledged that everyone has the right to food, adequate food, as part of a decent standard of living, basically repeating the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, but also added that that everyone should also have a right to freedom from hunger, which is not exactly the same thing as one looks at the political economic organization of the world. And these freedom from hunger aspects were particularly developed at the 1974 International Conference on Nutrition, where it became increasingly obvious to the world that there was more than enough food available in the world to feed everyone an adequate diet if that food were equitably distributed, and therefore the problem was access, an economic problem of access, and political will to protect access. So the right to food becomes ever more complicated in that setting. Since the Food and Agriculture Organization takes principal responsibility or the lead within United Nations organizations for food and food security and food research and increasingly the right to food, it's also the case that they look across the city to the Vatican for there to be support and supporting statements by the Pope to open these meetings and to give a spiritual underpinning to the work that goes on in the agencies. And I certainly, over the years, have been very impressed with the statements that have come from the Vatican in relation to these meetings. The most recent meeting was the 2014 International Conference on Nutrition II, which provided the opportunity for Pope Francis to speak out on issues of hunger, on issues of human rights, and many of the underlying structural issues that he talks about also in relation to his initiative on environmental responsibilities. So the right to food. The right to food also, then, as we consider this issue, relates to certain kinds of Catholic doctrine. So I want to move on then, since I'm not going to talk for too long, to the statement that Barry Brenton and I produced for the Holy See in 2013, talking about the way in which the legal language of the right to food connected to basic Catholic social doctrine. And I look forward to any corrections on your part that might be here. Okay, so what we did, the talking points on securing the human right to food within and across borders, because we were also quite aware that that the Church has been very active in working with refugees, and I know that's particularly the case here at Boston College, that the Center on Human Rights works very much with refugees. So we identified three basic organizing principles to think about the right to food. One was the universal solidarity as the essential theme of the human right to food. So universal solidarity, and we talked about this theme as really very basic to understanding why everyone at every level in society has responsibilities to ensure the right to food. We talked about this in terms of norms. We talked about this in terms of what faith-based communities, community-level groups, have to contribute by being able to report on hungry populations at the local community level, hungry households within communities. These were very important issues. And also about the principle of social solidarity, that is, the elimination of exclusions of those who are disadvantaged as a very important issue, particularly as it relates to hunger in immigration and refugee situations where people are moving across borders. Additional issues were equitable distribution of resources and humanitarian access. During 2013, there was also very great concern with the plight of small farmers. And this comes up over and over again in the Roman Catholic and the Vatican and the Caritas statements, where there's special attention to small farmers. And in fact, in Caritas's follow-up on Future Without Hunger and One Human Family, A World Without Hunger, A Vision of a World Without Hunger, both of these, improving the lot of the small farmer really is their principal focus as they look at what everyone and all policies at every level should be working on, small local food producers and making sure they have adequate access to food. There are also the issues of humanitarian access across borders and what UN agencies and NGOs, including faith-based organizations, can do together to make sure that various kinds of assistance reaches everyone. We located and used a quote from Pope Benedict XVI, which affirmed that experience shows that even advanced technical solutions lack efficiency, which is the term in which most of the UN agencies look at possible agricultural food security programs, if they do not put the person first and foremost, who comes first and who, in his or her spiritual and physical dimensions, is the alpha and the omega of all activity. And this is not the kind of language that we hear from the UN, but it is the kind of language that we hear from faith communities, which is one of the reasons why it's so important to make sure that the voices of faith communities are also part of the discussion. If you want to talk about new agricultural technologies, that's another area that I work on, so you can also bring that up in the discussion. There are special obligations, according to the right to food, to assist those who are disadvantaged, and respect for the human right to food requires official policies of non-alienation of particularly of smallholders or others who are disadvantaged within communities. So there are many directives here aimed both at policymakers who take a political stance, but also at members of religious communities who are taking moral stances. And Again, the emphasis here was on small farmers. In addition to the universal solidarity, we then identified a second point of subsidiarity as a guiding principle for food security and the human right to food. And this then addressed the responsibilities and the possible roles of communities at the local level and community organizations, agencies below the level of the state. The human rights framework mostly deals with the obligations of states. We here noted that the principle of subsidiarity means that everyone has certain responsibilities through the various organizations with which they're associated. We added here also the tenet of sustainability, the intergenerational obligations, which are increasingly part of the international political and legal discourse, but are also certainly part of the faith discourse. So the second principle, subsidiarity. The third principle was human dignity and preferential options for the vulnerable should be at the center of economic development and food security policies. And the language of deprivation and addressing the issues of deprivation, I think, are very, very strong, both in the philosophical language of human rights and also in the religious language of human rights. Henry Hsu, the philosopher, talked about basic rights, and he talked about basic rights conferring obligations on those who should respond to demands for rights. And the first is to respect, not to deprive people's customary rights to land, access to land, to clean water and livelihoods. Very, very important to respect, not to deprive. The second obligation is to protect from deprivation. People's access, in the case of food, to affordable food, clean water and environment, and health care. So respect and protect. The third is to protect the additional rights of workers and of small farmers to freedom of association, to just wages, to safe working environment, to just compensation if they're forced to, they're evicted from their land, or forcibly separated from their assets and livelihoods. These are all part of the protect component, which I also find raised in the Pope Francis's language, the language of caring for the people, and for the earth. And then finally, there is also the human rights component of fulfilling, where people are unable, through these actions of protection and respect, to access adequate food. And again, what was very striking as I was going through the various language and statements by Pope Francis and his predecessors was a very strong emphasis not on the fulfill component, but on the respect and protect components of the right to food. I think that's very important to be thinking about. And what also was quite striking, and remains quite striking, is the way his focus on consumerism and the culture of waste becomes so important as he's addressing both the hunger issues and the environment issues. These are structural causes of both hunger and environmental degradation that everyone at every level must be able to address through their actions with communities at various levels. And the very important statement that throwing food away is like stealing from the tables of the poor and the hungry comes up early on. It's not just a very important statement in the most recent papal pronouncements. And I want to therefore emphasize these connections rather than any disconnection, possible disconnection, between the hunger and the environment issues. So with this as background, the statements on the right to food, which then became part of the Holy See's testimony in 2013 at the General Assembly, and with Pope Francis's additional statements about the right to food and with the Caritas campaign about one human family, food for all, we brought together a group of four of us to talk about Pope Francis's statements. Pope Francis, and specifically we entitled the panel, Pope Francis and Ending Hunger, Anthropological, Sacred, and Secular Frameworks, Advancing the Human Right to Food. That was a pretty big statement. And this was one of the policy sessions, and we structured it as a conversation between myself as moderator and professional working on the right to food, and Barry Brenton's work as a consultant for Catholic Relief Services and to the Holy See, structuring some of the educational and awareness-building activities for the Roman Catholic Church from his role as a nutritional anthropologist at St. John's University. I brought in Victoria Sanford, who's a very well-known human rights anthropologist, scholar, activist, who works especially on human rights basic human rights violations in Latin American countries, and has written really searing accounts of the ethnocides, genocides in Guatemala, and is working with a number of colleagues also in South America, looking at how hunger is one of the human rights violations that goes along with the other kinds of civil, political human rights violations that go on in these countries. I also brought in an anthropological expert on Roman Catholicism. I actually learned that this is a growing field, if you didn't know that. I certainly learned that. And this was Victoria Napolitano, who's been working, trying to understand how Pope Francis and his predecessors really base their concerns about the encounter with immigrants and human rights across borders in a very basic theology of human dignity and address of the plight of the poor. So there we had it. We had Barry Brenton talking about his work in drawing together educational materials on the right to food that would be widely available, particularly to Roman Catholic universities. And what he saw is a basic obligation of Roman Catholic universities and both faculty, students, administrators, to make sure these kinds of materials are available. And on the chance that these are not available here at Boston College, I just wanted to make sure that we had this kind of information now available for everyone to be considering. And Caritas and CRS, in addition, are producing materials subsequent to the right to food, looking at the implications of what every Catholic university can do and what every Catholic student, administrator, faculty member can do in terms of responding to the Pope's initiative on environment. And Barry talked about these issues in relation to the way he, as an anthropologist, works in communities where he tries to understand how communities are trying to prevent and respond to their own problems of hunger, and how Catholic service agencies, such as Caritas or Catholic Relief Services, can raise awareness, assist particularly small farmers in developing countries in meeting their own food needs. So he talked about these issues in particular. He also raised the issue that in the U.S., where we seem to have abundant food resources, what are some of the ways in which every individual can examine their own consumption, where food is coming from, how it's processed, what are the conditions of labor that are dealing with food all along the food chain, how can one's own individual consumption behavior become a way of improving the human rights situation of all of those who labor every point along the food chain. As an anthropologist, what he also saw was his own responsibility to translate what are international legal documents and policies into religious and cultural language, and to analyze the kinds of institutions and communities that do this. And I, myself, as an anthropologist who specialized in ecological anthropology and anthropological approaches to religion, I always like to look at the rituals that we develop in our various communities as places to really concentrate on values and how we relate to fellow human beings and relate our food consumption behavior and also our food production and processing behavior to our relationships to the earth. So that's putting together the professional, you know, what do we do as professional anthropologists that would be different from what we might be doing as religious activists. We try to put those together but also distinguish who we are. And one of the very important points that he made, he went with a Caritas or or Catholic Relief Service delegation to Zambia at a time when the Zambian government was resisting U.S. food aid with genetically modified corn. And he said from his conversations it emerged that the resistance was taken out of context. It wasn't that the Zambian government was necessarily rejecting genetically modified products. That wasn't the point. The point was they were concerned about their farmers and how were the farmers supposed to be making a living. If there was new technology, how were the farmers supposed to safely and sustainably access this? And what he saw and could analyze was the way in which the polarizing politics of genetically modified organisms were somehow able to lose this more important human conversation about the plight of smallholders and national government address of the plight of smallholders. When I contacted Barry for an update on the environment issues, what he also said was that he saw a basic overlap in the environment and food issues, particularly around the issues of biodiversity, which certainly that's a concern for sustainable agriculture, sustainable food, and about the issues of waste. How can food systems be organized in a way that there's less waste, both of the physical food, but also of the human beings who are responsible for moving food all along the food chain? He saw those as basic overlap, although there wasn't very much explicit discussion of the food issues. On the question of the of updates, I also connected with him and said, well, I think basically Pope Francis is talking in all cases about the underlying structural causes of hunger and environmental degradation, and that really is a place for us to focus. Victoria Sanford, who's a professor of anthropology at Lehman College, where she's affiliated with the City University of New York Graduate Center, has been thinking about the way in which hunger and starvation are used as weapons of powerful political players who are denying the rights and demands of poor and disadvantaged people. Although she's not working directly on these food issues, when I encountered her at the anthropology meetings where we presented the Pope Francis section, what she said was that she knew colleagues, and she mentioned Colombia as one of the places where people were definitely in terrible straits, where they were trying to avoid the violence of government or paragovernmental or criminal forces, and that there simply wasn't enough attention to the hunger issues. And so what we are trying to follow up on is who's actually raising awareness about hunger as a human rights violation along with civil political rights violations in these places. And she also put me in touch with U.S., State Department diplomatic people after I responded to the session that was run here at Boston College last year on the plight of Salvadorians, where the Human Rights Center, your SUC Human Rights Center, convened a session with representatives from El Salvador talking about the way in which certain U.S. policies were threatening their right to food and their agricultural interests. And I immediately followed up by emailing her, and she got me in touch with U.S. representatives who were denying that U.S. policies were doing the things that I had heard the Salvadorians testify the U.S. was doing. And I think this kind of networking is extremely important, and I'm very glad and hope that the kinds of programs that Boston College is doing will continue to bring to light these kinds of violations. I then, in the anthropology session, talked about the human right to food, its legal, political, economic, and sociocultural frameworks. I talked about the language, four generations of human rights and cross-cutting rights, where the legal system is really looking at who can be held accountable and what will be the circumstances under which they would be held accountable within a legal framework, whereas the religious language focuses on humanity and human dignity. So I was trying to understand where do these two overlap. The religious language also focuses on obligations and who has them through the principle of common good and subsidiarity, not necessarily through particular legal framework. The religious language also focuses on the community even more than it focuses on individual rights per se. The Vatican is also very clear on its concept of an approach to human rights that affirms economic, social, and cultural along with civil and political rights, and adds the rights of children and women as very basic to human rights understandings. There's, again, this emphasis on community, the idea that a decent standard of living and human dignity can only be achieved in community. The idea also followed by explorations of what community life entails and how can political policy contribute. It raises issues of small and medium-scale farmers and businesses, cooperatives that bring people together to share efforts and food. There's also a strong language condemning business and marketing practices that do not put people, as in human beings, before profits, and a clear call for measuring the impacts of policies and programs and their alignment with spiritual as well as economic values. What's most important, perhaps, is that the ultimate authority for the human right to food is not human, that is UN or national laws, but God, the creator, who demands right behaviors on the part of all people, communities, and governments, that no one goes hungry. So these are very important overlaps, but also distinctions. Within the human rights framework that both philosophers and legal experts talk about as respect, protect, and fulfill the human right to food, I found that the Catholic social teachings on economic justice really focus on protect and defend and consequent obligations. And this is very important. It's part of progressive realization means progressive care for other human beings and for the environment. Paraphrasing one statement, it really summarizes what I see as very basic to the religious point of view. God wants children to grow into healthy and active adults who can earn an honest living, protect natural resources, participate in the community of common good. These challenges apply to everyone to make sure that this happens. So these, again, address these issues of multiple level of address. As an anthropologist, what I focused on was that I'm very concerned with the issue of pluralism and the question, how do I see the legal and the political versus the religious coming together is very important in this regard. I see that there's a common ground across religious traditions, but also differences, which suggests that a universal human right to food, like other human rights, is constantly evolving, and it's very important to bring additional voices to this path. And if you want to talk further about pluralism, that really is my major focus as I take pluralist approach to human rights. But what I also want to point out is that there are three components to the human right to food, and most of the monitoring and evaluation focuses on two, and beginning with the food. So what is adequate food? And there's just enormous amount of literature out there talking about what's adequate food. Is it nutritionally adequate? Does it provide enough food energy? Is it balanced nutrition? And is it culturally appropriate? And Pope Francis's most recent statements really are looking at that culturally appropriate part, but that's the food part in a spiritual and cultural as well as technical sense. The second major emphasis usually is on rights, and that's where the legal people take precedence. They're looking at rights. They're trying to understand how rights can be formulated and enforced and adjudicated. But the religious language really is focusing much more on duties and obligations at multiple levels. And the religious critique of human rights is that there's not enough focus on duties. And that's very important. But when I approached these literatures as an anthropologist, what I found was that really what was being neglected was this whole concept of who is a human being. Because as I looked across world traditions and national traditions, there were a lot of human rights proclaimed out there. They were even enacted. They were legislative, they were executive, they were judicial. But the question was, who was a human being considered a member of the community protected by these rights? Who was a full human being? And I really focused on that, the principles of exclusion, principles of discrimination. And one of the resounding experiences of my professional life was when I went to the human rights legal expert Phil Alston, at that time at the Tufts Fletcher School in Medford, and I said to him, and I presented this to him, I said, I think the issue is not whether countries have rights and not whether there is adequate food, whether it's adequate food and it's adequately formulated as a right, but the real question is, who is a human being deserving of rights, a full human being? And he immediately exploded. He was furious. And he said to me, that's why we don't talk to anthropologists, also why we don't talk to philosophers, because you're really questioning the whole concept of whether every human being is an equal human being, which is where we start. We don't question that. And I then also realized that he was going back to Jacques Maritain, who was one of the initial formulators after World War II and respondents to the questions of human rights and to the issues of human dignity that the religious perspective also covers. Moving quite quickly then, Valentina Napolitano, who is a University of Toronto Associate Professor of Anthropology and Director of Latin American Studies, has been looking at human rights mostly in the context of looking at immigrants and how they are treated and transnationalism in the Roman Catholic Church. And if you haven't seen her book, I do recommend it. She also has a number of other articles that update what she was thinking about 2 years ago. But what she really pointed out was that to understand the Roman Catholic theological position, which was part of the title here, it was also important to be thinking about the issue of how humanity is and human dignity are described, and how does Pope Francis dealing with the question of humanity, of a human being, what is a human being, how does the human being relate to society, and human dignity as the most important aspect of thinking about human rights. So, and she traced this back through Catholic doctrine, through the Middle Ages, through the early church, a very important theological discussion. She also, and which also focused not only on humanity, but on personhood, what kinds of personhood are being advocated. But she also focused on the way in which the concept of poverty and the poor are treated and the encounter with the poor. And what she pointed out as she read through the right to food documents, which I was sending her, which she had never looked at before, which she really was not part of what she was usually looking at, she said, this is really incredible, she said, as I go through this, because what the Pope Francis is really expressing is this view that the encounter with the poor and who are the poor and who will bring about the real transformations that we need in thinking, he's really saying that the poor have this very, very special role in terms of the transformation of our human rights situation. And this, again, is nothing that ever comes up in the international legal political literature. So some other points to be considering, as we can also consider in our discussion, the role of Pope Francis in talking about inequality, the globalization of indifference, power and how to truth versus power, and the role of community. So I think at this point I probably should stop talking and just throw out a couple of questions about how do you see your roles in advancing the agenda of promoting human rights and protection of the environment. What are the kinds of educational materials and visionary activities, materials that you find of use? As you think about the activities on the ground and the particular actions you can take, how do you combine your concerns about climate change with food security issues? And how do you see yourselves combining, since you've got a couple of philosophers here, how do you see yourselves really putting your philosophy to work in activism so that you can be activists but also be advancing your understandings through your research of some of these underlying values? And let me just end by once again thanking you for giving me an opportunity to reciprocate for the great kindness I've experienced in working on these materials with various Roman Catholic agencies and authorities in trying to advance our common agenda of a world with human rights and without hunger.